Today with Dr. K, I'm Dr. K Wise Whitehead, here again to have a conversation with you about some of the stories that matter. Folks, it is Wednesday, which means it's time for the weekly wrap. This is the one day during the week when we allow you, the listeners, to drive the conversation. I want you to think of it like a kitchen table where you sit down with your family and your friends, you're having your coffee, you're getting some coffee cake, and you just start having a conversation and you talk about everything. Nothing is off the table when you pull up a chair to the kitchen table. And that's what we're talking about today. We're letting you determine and dictate the direction of the conversation. What have you been thinking about? What have you been talking to your colleagues about? What have you been sharing with your own children? Give us a call and share that with us here. 410-319-8888. We're going to do our kitchen table. And then in the second hour, I have invited on Davon Love for Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle to talk about a way that we can track how the people that we voted into office here in Baltimore City, how we can track their voting. Dr. Lawrence Brown, who's right here at Morgan State University, put a chart out last night, where he noted how politicians have been voting on issues around social justice and equity. And it is shocking, folks. I looked at the voting records from Leon Pinkin and Carl Stokes and John Bullock. Shocking is an understatement. So we're going to talk about that today and make sense of what it means to have the people that we voted in office where they are not in lockstep with us and the direction of this city. I want to expose that today in the second hour with information from Dr. Lawrence Brown. It is a chart showing how Baltimore City Council members consistently vote around issues of social justice and racial equity. We're going to talk about that in our second hour. But first, I want to play Blackopoly. Now, you know, we have just enjoyed Blackopoly. We have a good time playing this game. And lately, we've been doing a thing called Blackopoly Set to Music. I mean, we're calling it K-opoly now. So K-opoly Set to Music, where we pull together different singers singing the exact same song. And you have to tell us who is singing the song and the name of the song. Well, we have one for you today, and I'm very excited about it. I'm going to go ahead and have Dre play the Blackopoly question 6516. You have to tell me at the end the name of the singers in the correct order and the name of the song that they're singing.
Strumming my pain with his fingers, singing my life with his words, killing me softly with his song.
Folks, that's the Blackopoly quiz that's on the table for today. So what do you win? We have a signed copy of a book by James Comer, Dr. James Comer, called Leave No Child Behind, with a foreword by Henry Louis Gates. You know that for adults who play Blackopoly, we like to pass books around. We want you to take the book, read it, and pass it on to someone else. It's a way of us recycling a lot of books that people have already taken a look at. I use this book for some of my research, and I'm happy to share it. It's called Leave No Child Behind, Preparing Today's Youth for Tomorrow's World, with a foreword by Henry Louis Gates. Let's open up and talk about some things that I've been thinking about while you're kind of getting your thoughts together. I have been so troubled by this cheating scandal that came out yesterday, where you have a number of celebrities as well as very rich people not of color, my PNOCs, white folks, who were able to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars to get their child admitted into places like Harvard and Stanford and UCLA. What bothers me the most is that my sons have always had to work so hard in order to get some of the successes that they have. Nothing has been given to them. Whenever they showed up places, even with their high test scores, there was always this feeling that they didn't belong. Always the assumption that they're there because they're an athlete or they're there because they're black. There was never an idea put on the table that they are there because they earned their way into the room. For a number of us, we've been fighting against the stigma of affirmative action for a very long time. I have been myself the only black person in a number of classrooms that I've gone to, whether it's in graduate school, at University of Notre Dame in Indiana, where people wonder, since I was the first black person to attend my program, how I got into the program, what brought me there. This idea that every time we show up in these environments, the notion is that we're taking the spot from a more well-deserved white student as if we don't have the grades to be at the table. And so in this scam that broke yesterday, 50 people, including a number of Hollywood stars, Felicity Huffman, Laura Loughlin, were charged in this scheme in which what they did, they allegedly bribed college coaches and other insiders to get their kids into these schools. Federal authorities are calling it the biggest college admission scam ever prosecuted by the U.S. Justice Department. Parents paid an estimated $25 million in bribes. Now, I don't know about you, but I have been tossing and turning about this all evening because I have a number of things that irritate me. And privilege working is something that irritates me to no end because I come from the idea that for black and brown folks in this country, we always have to prove our worth. We always have to work harder. We always have to work longer. We always have to do more. We're always told that we have to be twice as good, sometimes three times as good, because they're going to assume that you don't belong. And you compare that to mediocre young people, not of color, who are able to have their parents write a check and get them in to the most prestigious universities that our children are struggling to get into. I think about the SAT and the number of times my son took the SAT in order to try to get a competitive score. Well, I'm finding out here with this scam, their parents simply paid authorities to either have someone take the exam for them or to correct their test scores afterwards, to go back through and change the ones that they got wrong and make them right. There is something about this that is fundamentally wrong, because for every student admitted through fraud, there's another honest and genuinely talented student who is rejected. And I believe that they should be arrested. It taints the whole system. Now, I've been asked by one of my producers, say, well, you know, how is this any different than just folks who can pick up the phone and call and get their child into Harvard? Or in the case of Jared Kushner, well, your daddy can make a $2.5 million donation to Harvard, and so when your application comes across the desk, of course you're going to get in. How is that any different from students who may have gotten in on their name? I'm thinking about, you know, Malia. So coming out of school, I mean, she was able to get into Harvard. I'm not saying she wasn't a straight-A student. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, but being an Obama definitely didn't hurt her. I'm thinking about David Hogg, you know, coming from Marjorie Stoneman Douglas. I mean, he's now a nationally recognized name. And when he was accepted into Harvard, a number of students this year pushed back and said, I know his grades. My grades are higher, but he's David Hogg. So being that person surely did not work against him. How do we dismantle this system? I think about that on one end, and I couple that with the number of stories that we found about black mothers who did whatever they could to give their students an opportunity to attend a different school. So there's one woman in particular, and this was a couple of years ago in Ohio. She used her father's address. They call it scamming the system. She used her father's address just so her daughters could attend a better school. The school in her neighborhood was not a high-quality school. There was a lot of drug activity happening at the school, a lot of violence happening in the school. So she used her father's address just so her daughters wouldn't have to go to that school. Well, she got 10 days in jail. There's another black woman, another mother, and this is a couple of years ago as well. She was homeless, and she lied, used a false address, just so her child could attend, 6 years old, could attend a decent school. So how far would you go to make sure your child has an opportunity to have a better education? Folks, if I understand that the school in my neighborhood is not up to snuff and I need to turn some things around so my child can have an opportunity to have a better future, would you not be willing to do it? Is there a way that we can make the schools equitable so we don't have to try to hustle the system? And if we are hustling the system, does it then require us to go to jail for it just because we want our child to have an opportunity to have a better future? I'm thinking a lot about this. I want to know what you're thinking about. Give me a call, 410-319-8888. I have Eric on the phone from Woodmore. Eric, how are you?
I'm great, Dr. K, and yourself?
I'm doing well here. Just trying to calm myself down from this cheating scandal has got me all so upset here.
I know. Take a deep breath, dear.
So you're calling to play My Blackopoly?
Yes, ma'am. I certainly am.
All right. So you got to name the singers in the right order and then tell me the name of the song.
Okay. The first young lady was Lauryn Hill.
Yes.
Killing Me Softly.
Mm-hmm.
The second young lady was Roberta Fleck.
Absolutely.
Killing Me Softly.
Mm-hmm.
Last but not least, Alicia Keys, Killing Me Softly.
Absolutely. So tell me now, how did you guess this? Now, I thought the Lauryn Hill one was easy. You had to know Roberta Flack, and you had to have heard Alicia Keys. How did you guess it?
Had to do my due diligence.
Well, you hold on, because what we have for you is we do have this book for you, Eric. Hold on. Justine is going to take your information. Folks, Killing Me Softly, one of my favorite songs. The first person to sing was Roberta Flack, but we had Lauryn Hill from the Fugees singing it first. We had a little piece of Roberta Flack singing it live. And then we grabbed the Alicia Keys clip from the Grammys this year where she was saluting Roberta Flack and lifting her up for her birthday. So that was our Blackopoly for today. All right, 410-319-8888. Let's talk about what's on your mind. What do you think about this cheating scam? Like, what's happening with the ways in which people not of color, white folks, have been able to write big, huge checks and now they're getting busted for it to get their child, not just in these elite schools, but taking away athletic spots, right? Let's talk about that. We have Diane on the phone from Baltimore. Diane, how are you?
Hey, Dr. K. I had called to play your black doctor. Oh. He beat me. But you know what? He was good because the last person, she sounded a little bit like Fantasia to me.
Ah, okay.
But it was Alicia Keys, but it did sound like Fantasia. And then I listened again. I said, oh, okay, Alicia Keys. But it, you know, because it, Fantasia can blow that just like
she
that.
She can. So what's on your mind today, Diane, since it's the weekly wrap?
Well, it's not that cheating scam because they've been doing that for so long. Like you just said, you named people how they wrote checks, right, and their child, like Jared Kushner. That has always been. So how do we change that dynamic as people, you know, no matter what color? How do we change that where they can't do that? And remember, we did a show on a young girl in Atlanta, right?
Yes.
And they took her SAT thing from her because when
yes.
she took it over again,
in
she
Florida.
Scored real
yes.
high, right?
Yes.
And I thought about that when it first broke yesterday. I thought about that young lady. I said, wait a minute. She got tutored, and she scored high, and yep. they said that she cheated. And these people right here, their children didn't even sit in the classroom because one young lady, her mother played on Full House.
Yes.
And she did a video.
Yep.
And she really didn't want to be in college.
No, she did not. And we actually want to play that video when I get finished. We're going to play what she talked about. She didn't care about school. Go ahead, Diane.
My other thing is, because I'm going to get off, I know you got a full line. I wanted to know why we just can't get together, no matter what religion we are. It keeps us far apart, and so much is happening in Baltimore that we need to save our children, not only our children, but ourselves and our community. And I was thinking about the great Holland Park area. That's a historical. I don't know if they got the status yet, but I remember so many prominent people that lived in Holland Park, and as well as they call it Marble Hill, right on Drew Hill Avenue, right off of and McCullough Street. those areas should be designated as historical black areas where they should be able to get the money from the feds and the city.
Right, to save
and
those
so
communities.
And so why can't we, as, you know, whatever religion we belong to, get together and do that, say, for even for our children and ourselves, and pass the legacy along? You know, that's what really bothers me, that we are not, you know, even for our children and our school, we are not fighting for our children in Baltimore City School, because we say they're not our children, but they are our
children.
They're
all our children. Thank you so much, Diane. I appreciate you. Folks, I'm going to play that clip that Diane was talking about, 6519, which is Lori Loughlin. Lori Loughlin from Full House. Aunt Becky, this is her daughter. Let's take a listen to this.
I don't know how much of school I'm going to attend, but I'm going to go in and talk to my deans and everyone and hope that I can try and balance it all. But I do want the experience of, like, game days, partying. I don't really care about school.
She's like, I don't even care about school. So, Mom, Dad, you're writing these big checks, getting me in. I don't even care about school. Let me tell you what these students got into. Yale, Stanford, Georgetown, Wake Forest, University of Texas, University of Southern California, and the University of California, Los Angeles. And, folks, I want to be clear that my frustration about this is not just because I want to be able to write a check for my son. That's not why I'm frustrated. I'm frustrated because if you take a deep, hard, long look at education in this country, schools today are more racially segregated in such a way that you think Brown v. Board never even happened. There was a report that came out by ProPublica that said in 1963, about 1% of black children in the South attended school with white children. However, by the early 1970s, the South had been remade, where they had 90% of black children attending desegregated schools. That progress has been rolled back. They said if you look across the South now, 90% of the children in the South attend schools with people who only look like them. So we fought to break down the barriers of segregation. We made some strides in the 70s, and now in 2019, all of those have been rolled back. A second thing that this study noted is that public school segregation is worse in the northeastern states, which means that black students in the Northeast are more segregated than kids in the South. This analysis was done by the Civil Rights Project at the University of California, Los Angeles, and it showed that more than half, 51.4% of black students in the Northeast attended schools where the student population was 90% to 100% minority. You know what the place is the worst off? New York. When we talk about segregation, it's not the South right now, folks. It's in the Northeastern states. Another thing, the most segregated minority group right now is Latinos. That is the most segregated group right now in this country. And this is the part that's going to get you. And this is why I was so angry with that report. More money is spent on schools with majority white populations. There was a study done by the Center for American Progress. It found that public schools with student populations that are more than 90% white receive an average of $733 per student. That's 18% more per student than schools where 90% of the students are of color. What does that mean, folks? It means if you're white and you're going to school with all white kids, your school gets more money. Therefore, you have better resources. You have better opportunities at your school. You have those new uniforms. You have a different kind of lunch because you get more money just for the simple fact that you are white and you attend the school with mostly white kids. If you are black and you attend the school with mostly black kids, you get 18% fewer dollars coming in the door per child. Think about what that means. Then we have a struggling school system. Then we don't have enough resources. Then we don't have a library that's up and functioning. Then we don't have technology. That's why scandals like this make me so angry. Because it's not about whether or not Lori Loughlin's child can go to Yale. It's not about that. It's about the deep, systematic racism that's happening in this country that's working to miseducate our children. We have Michael on the phone from Baltimore. Michael, how are you?
Okay.
Yes, how are you doing, sir?
Okay. I'm listening to you and like the young lady that called said, they've been doing that for a long time. And I'm for separate but equal funding and education for our children, because if our children go to school with their children, they're not going to be treated the same. I went through that. I know when I was in school in the 60s. But also the fact that they've always gotten more funding than we did because they control everything. And then now the punishment, because they're all going to claim, well, the students, the children will say they didn't know what the parents were doing. School going to say they didn't know. And they're probably just going to get a slap on the wrist. They're not going to get no severe punishment for doing that. But if it was us doing it, it'd be a totally different story.
We would be in jail at this point. Absolutely.
Almost definitely.
Because they put us in jail. They put us in jail.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, there are two prominent cases where black women were, they weren't even scamming with money. They just used a different address of a family member just so their child could attend a better school.
Right, right. And we can't win, I'm saying? But they can still do whatever they want.
Yeah.
And it's okay.
Yeah. I mean, but I think you're touching on something that I'm going to drill down into. Thank you so much for calling. This idea, folks, maybe, and I know I've put this out on the floor before, but maybe it's time for separate but equal. And so I know people are probably like, what are you talking about? No, I'm not talking about legalized segregation, right? I'm not talking about Jim Crow. When black folks had to eat in the alleyway and get our food from the, the back door. I'm not talking about when you had the colored only or white only signs and our water fountain was cement and theirs was porcelain. I'm not talking about that. I'm saying, is it possible that we can actually have equal access to opportunities for our children? So if white kids are getting $733 per child, then why can't we give black children $733 per child? And then we can be in separate environments that are equal. Because apparently people want separate environments. Because it says right now that white parents are less likely to choose an all-black school. This is Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. When we come back, Sharon, Leo, Natanya, Angela, I'm coming to you. Folks, there's another line open for you. 410-319-8888. Join the kitchen table and stay with us. Welcome back to Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. Folks, it's the weekly wrap. It's that one day of the week where we open up the phone lines, we allow you to drive the conversation, and you tell us what you've been thinking about. I've just kind of thrown out on the table something I've been thinking about. And I know that when you talk about this college scam, I know it's not new information. I know the system has been stacked against us. I know all of that. I guess what it made me realize is that when we talk about this system being stacked against us, I think we get back into what Carter G. Woodson once said when he wrote that book, The Miseducation of the Negro Children, that the idea, what does it mean to have our children? And his is Miseducation of a Negro, but I'm saying he drilled down into our children. What does it mean to have our children in a system where they are not receiving the education that they deserve? I don't think that your education should be based upon whether you're a good person or whether or not your parents have a lot of money or whether or not your parents can write a big old check or can pick up the phone. I don't think it should be based upon that. In order to get our children to the next level, it starts with K-12, and that's what makes me angry. That I know the system stacked against us, and privilege is something that irritates me to no end. But that's what I'm thinking about. I invite you to give me a call. Tell me what you've been thinking about, what you've been talking about. What's up with you? 410-319-8888. I have Sharon on the phone. Sharon's a new caller from Baltimore. Sharon, how are you? And welcome to the family.
Oh, hi, Dr. K.
How are you?
All is well. I'm just a little hoarse. I know spring is coming. Getting all down in my voice. But I have to say this. You know, those people have been doing this forever. But what I don't like is when L people do it. I have a grandbaby who has been an honor roll student since she's been in school. And her counselor told her she was one point away from getting in the school she supposed that she chose. But when she asked around, she had friends that got in there, had lower scores than her. But my daughter put the gas to the pedal, baby, and she is all up in that school. You hear me? But that's what I'm talking about. Stop holding children back. Don't hold our children back. Please don't be like these people.
I agree.
They messed up.
I agree. I mean, but the idea is that when they hold our children back, you're talking, it has a lifetime impact. not just on our children, but on our grandchildren, on our community. Because when one of us rises, I would argue, Sharon, we all rise. When your granddaughter rises, we all rise.
Because
it makes every generation that comes after your granddaughter that much better. So when you you hold us back, it impacts a generation. It's not just one child.
Not this one. You're right. Because I'll never forget the way when my grandbaby called me up, her face looked like she just wanted to give up, Dr. K.
Wow. Wow.
Because she said, all I done, man, I know I done it, I know. But she up in there, Dr. K, and by the way, she listens to you, too. I got to
All right. I appreciate that. Tell her we're lifting her up because when she rises, Sharon, we're all rising with her. Thank you so much. We have Leo Burris on the phone from Bolton Hill. Leo, how are you?
Dr. K-Wise Whitehead, as always, I'm wonderful. Say happy birthday.
Happy birthday, sir.
Monday was my birthday. And I must tell you that always you're on the money. And we have one criminal justice system, which is anchored in institutional racism.
Yes, yes, you're absolutely
right. I mean, that's the underpinning of our criminal justice system. I am a tennis player, and I note that one of the coaches primarily got more than $1 million, and he's at another school for conspiring in this this great fiasco, this great conspiracy. That I think it's a teachable moment. It reminds us as African people of the necessity to empower ourselves to prioritize Black economic and political and educational power, and understanding that self-preservation is what it's all about.
Right.
We have ourselves and God. We can't depend just simply on white liberals or diversity per se. Institutional racism is not going anywhere, and we have to be more resolved, more resilient now than ever before in terms of how we mobilize our children, educate our children, whether it's homeschooling or by any means necessary, to ensure that we make it or survive,
right.
Because the intention is that we not make it. I'm looking at the fact, I see the linkage between not paying college and university athletes. You don't pay them anything. You continue to enrich these Ivy League schools and HBCUs as well.
Right.
You don't pay the athletes, but you're making millions and billions of dollars for these educational institutions, and meanwhile you continue to rip off the students who attend, and you use them as puppets, as pawns, as flunkies to empower you and to enrich the school, while at the same time white folks are getting over like a fat rat, I call it, in terms of how they spend millions of dollars to prop up their children who sometimes are qualified, many times are not qualified,
but
that's called white privilege.
That's what, and the thing that gets me, Leo, and first, you know, definitely happy birthday. So glad you called. But this one burned me up because it's something that Michelle Obama said when she talked about the fact that mediocre young white men have the ability, because of the money that their parents have, to fail up. So if you have enough money and you get in trouble at school, your parents can simply write a check. They can keep you from having to deal with the fallout that is a natural result of the things that you're doing. It's called failing up, folks. This is how white privilege works in this country. We have Natanya on the phone. Natanya, how are you?
Hey, Dr. K. Good, and yourself?
I'm doing well. Thank you for calling.
I have to, Lord, I tell you, I'm going to piggyback on the resource part.
Yes.
Okay. A student at TU, myself, always struggled in math, so I thought.
Mm-hmm.
But I said to my daughter, I said, you know what? I wonder if they have a center for students with disabilities.
Mm.
And then I looked at my daughter, I said, of course. Look at the school I'm talking about, right?
Right.
Of course they do. Dr. K, when I tell you they even have orientation for students with disabilities.
Mm.
I've never seen that anywhere else. And that's just not all. Yes, the money, the resources, yes. I've even talked, like I said, I work in the school system. I even asked my high school seniors if I see them when they started college, and I know they may struggle. You know, do you have this? Do you have that?
Right.
House and office, this thing called the smart pen. It takes a picture of everything you write. And if you don't want to write the lecture, you can hit a button on your pad and it will take the whole lecture. Okay? I'm telling you. Blew my mind. I couldn't believe it. Because, again, here we are.
It's the resources that our people, our children. And I want to be clear, Natanya. I know, I got to be clear, I know there's some Black and brown people out here who have a ton of money and they can write big checks. I know
that.
I mean, we do have, but for the most part, we're talking about the average median income.
Yeah.
We have fewer folks that can do that and more folks who are struggling to make ends meet.
Yeah, exactly.
And those are the ones who are being locked out because if you didn't go to that school, then you don't have those contacts. And if you don't have those contacts, then you can't make a phone call.
Sure
and
can.
If you can't make a phone call, then you probably don't have the kind of wealth we're talking about that enables you to make phone. It's all connected. And so all you're doing is you are working and sweating and trying and struggling to get your child into a school to set them up to be able to work and try and struggle to earn a scholarship for college.
Yeah, exactly.
You're not even talking about setting up a college fund because sometimes a college fund is between you paying mortgage and paying rent. There's no extra money. To put away.
Exactly.
That's what gets me is that it's just our children sometimes I feel like they are set up in this system to fail. And it's disturbing.
Even, what is it, bookholders. Bookholders is right across your street from the campus. Well, not right across, but it's right up on York Road. I paid a quarter for a philosophy book.
Wow.
A quarter.
Wow.
And like I said, that's a bus ride.
That is.
For us who live in East Baltimore, that's a bus ride.
Yep, you're absolutely
right. But if you don't know about it.
Yep. You don't know. You're completely locked out. And that's why we want to share these things. Natanya, thank you so much for just joining in and just chiming in. We have Angela from downtown Baltimore. Angela, how are you?
I'm doing really good, Dr. K. I listen to your show every day.
Thank you.
From work. I'm telling you that you're doing a phenomenal job.
Thank you very much.
I support the show. I just want to comment that I'm from New York, and I'm from Richmond County, and I just want to say that my mom made a decision when I was young to ensure that me and my older sister, we went to a school that was in a different community from ours because of the opportunities that it provided to us. And the schools that were in our community where we were at, there were a lot of social challenges, drugs, and all that type of thing. But when we went to the other school in a different community, we did very well. We participated in music and in art, and it really encouraged us to meet students that were pursuing an education further than the public school and end up going and graduating from college. So I just want to say it's never a bad thing for a student to go into a different community and to be involved with other types of cultures. There's a lot more diversity. When we were in our community, the other schools, my mom noticed that my older sisters that went, that they did poorly, and there were a lot of challenges. So it isn't always a bad thing.
Right.
If you whatever you have to do to ensure your child has great education, sometimes we just have to do it.
Let me ask you this. I mean, since we're putting it out there, would you break the law? Let me tell you what I'm talking about. The story of the woman who used her father's address. She did. She lied. That's a felony. But she said, I was willing to do that because I did not want my daughters going to a school where there's gang violence, there are fights all the time. I wanted them to have a better opportunity to have a better future.
I would not break the law, but my mom, she understood what it was. We lived around the corner from a public housing, and we were in a single-parent household. And my mom, she realized that the children, the schools that they were going to, that they were going to be facing a lot of issues. And no, I would not break the law. This was back in the 80s. Understand the crack epidemic.
Mm.
And my mom had to make a decision. She went to a coworker and said, "Look, my daughters, I don't want them to go to school on this part of town. I need to use the address." Now, maybe she didn't know it was a felony, but a mother would give her whole life for her children, you know?
I would. I mean, you're talking, when you look at what is in front of your child, and we both know that the right education, K-12, can open up doors for you all the way through.
Yes, ma'am.
I mean, and that's something, and you can't go back and make it up, right? You can't fail on that part, mm-hmm. and then by the time you're 25, you can go back, and you can't make it up. You
right.
get it that one time going through, and that's it.
Yes, yes, indeed. But sometimes it's at that moment, because now it's a different type of world now. But, I mean, just imagine any one of us having to make that decision.
I know.
But to have access to resources and an education. And because of that, I had developed all different types of friends that yeah. encouraged me to go to college. That whole path from elementary all the way to high school. And they would say, Angela, let's fill out college applications.
Changed
but the
everything.
Kids that were at the other school,
changed
they
everything.
were doing other things. They weren't, their conversation was different. So that's all I wanted to say.
Well,
You're doing a fantastic job, Dr. K.
Thank you so much, Angela, for chiming in. Folks, think about that when we start talking about this college scam, right? People are like, why are you talking about the celebrities? That's the back end. I'm saying we can trace this thing all the way through to the front end, that the ways in which our children are being miseducated, the ways in which our children are denied the resources that they need. We can't even get to the point where we can call up Yale, right? That's not a possibility for me. I'm not going to be able to write a check for $400,000 to get my son into Harvard. How my son is going to get into Harvard? It's through hard work, staying up late, suffering and struggling, sacrificing. It's doing everything. It's prayer. It's pushing. It's cajoling. It's doing everything I can. But folks, in order to even open that up, where's my child going to high school? Because there's some high schools in this city where even going every day, it's not giving you the foundation you need to be able to compete on the college level. It is connected. We have Nikki Banks on the phone, a new call from Baltimore. Nikki, how are you? And welcome to the family.
I'm good, and you, Dr. K, thank you so much. How are you today?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Good, 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 good. So after hearing what you said about, you know, the segregation and not in a way that that it would be, you know, a problem, I thought often about the fact that whatever you do, I think the biggest problem is the fact that I believe strongly that the school should be federalized, the education.
Right.
Because then you have one way of learning. So if I leave New York
yeah.
and I go to South Carolina, we all learn the same thing, something like English levels. You can go to many, many different countries and they all study on the same wave of English levels. But we don't have that here. And the education is always changing.
Right.
The way we teach our kids is always changing. Then you go to a different country and our kids can't compete.
Now, what's
and so if I feel if we had one way of educating, everybody would get the same education. There would be no, over here, Johnny learns math at this level because he's in Montgomery County. Johnny learns math at this level because he's in Baltimore City. It would be all the same everywhere for every state.
Well, you know, they're trying to do that. Now, you know, they're trying to do that with the Common Core. The whole idea behind the Common Core State Standards Initiative was to do exactly what you're saying, establish consistent educational standards across the states. So if you're coming from Pennsylvania and you're going into New York and going from fourth grade to fourth grade, you are then learning the same thing across the board. They were trying to do that with the Common Core. What they found, Nikki, is that even by putting the Common Core in there, schools are at so many levels. So fourth grade at one school, it's not even the same as fourth grade at another school. So they couldn't equally implement the Common Core because students, unfortunately, are getting two different type of educations depending upon the community that you're in, the economic
yeah.
advantages, and a lot of times it also is connected to race.
But wouldn't that mean we should just start at whatever kindergarten we're in now,
yes.
whatever pre-K
yes.
we have now, and move forward and taking it up from there?
Yes.
Since as you say, there's a different level of learning all across the place. You have to start with the youngest and
right.
bring everybody up in the same way in order to get that done. That's my personal belief
no, I'm
on it.
I'm agreeing with you.
That's a start.
I'm agreeing with
you.
But
yeah,
you know what the problem is, though, Nikki? And then I'm going to let you go.
What?
But see, I'm one of the people, I'm like you. I'm like, you know what, we need to start with kindergarten and go from there. But I have parents pushing back, and part of me pushes back as well, going, well, you know, my son's in 10th grade. My daughter's in 8th grade. You know, I have my nephew's in 4th grade. So you're saying we're not going to worry about them. And we got to start with kindergarten, because if we do it that way, Nikki, we're going to lose some along the way. We're going to lose a generation, really.
That's a good point. That's
yeah.
a really good point.
That's
you
hard.
Want everybody to learn, but at the same time, how do you get everybody to the same level?
That's the question. Thank you so much,
yeah.
Nikki. Folks, I'm saying if we toss out and say, okay, you know, we just need to focus on kindergarten, which a lot of schools do. My question is, from 1st to 12th grade, so we're just going to lose that generation. Because we're not talking about losing a couple of kids. There are a number of children in this country who are being miseducated, which means they're not getting what they need to effectively move to the next level. And we're passing them along, right? Because we need to make sure 16-year-olds are not in the same classroom as a 12-year-old. Well, what if that 16-year-old child does not have the skills they need to be able to move up? And where is that happening? It's happening in a lot of economically challenged schools. Not just economically challenged black schools, but there's some economically challenged white schools, like in Appalachia, which are having the same kind of deep-rooted institutional issues. We have David on the phone from West Baltimore. David, how are you? David, are you with us? All right, folks, let me move on from David. Let me go to Robert from Northwest Baltimore. Robert, how are you?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you.
That's very educating, Dr. Day. And we're finding out these different levels of education deprivation that goes on in this country. And it's bigger than what we all ultimately think of. And the name of the game that we are being kept out is assets. And we've been denied access to greater education. And even with the number of people, how we can do this and how we can do that, and they're making it all a secret society. This is what they've done in this country. And only the half.
Right.
You know, and I'm inquisitive right now about our AKAs and for sororities and fraternities.
Delta and Alpha. Okay, so now you're in quick, because maybe I can help you then. I'm a Delta, so how can I help you? What was your question about what happens or how education? Because it was and is an open organization, except when it comes to the things that we do as members. But it is about public service. It is about education. It is about being a support system. Like, it's not like skulls and crossbones. Like, it's not the comparison is not the same. Yeah, it's not the same at all.
I wanted to hear that differential.
Yeah, it's definitely very different.
In terms of that word I mentioned, assets.
Yeah.
And
that
is a very big word in terms of education.
Yes, you're absolutely correct. Thank you so much. I appreciate you, folks. I mean, he raised a good point. But when you talk about the 8 black fraternities and sororities, I mean, you're talking Alpha Kappa Alpha, Delta Sigma Theta, Zeta Phi Beta, Sigma Gamma Rho, the sororities, the fraternities are Kappa Alpha Psi, Alpha Phi Alpha, Omega Psi Phi, and Phi Beta Sigma. That's very different. The whole purpose of those black fraternities and sororities, it was about supporting black folks who were attending colleges. It was about giving them a support system, providing an outlet for public service. I mean, everybody from Dr. King to Winnie Mandela are members of a fraternity or sorority. Myself and Dre Melton, my board op as well. So this is not a secret society, except when it comes to things that we do as members. And I think in any club that you're a part of, there's a part where it's just for members and the conversations you have. We do it at our own household. Conversations that belong with the family. Doesn't mean it's a secret society. It means it just got business to do that only people who are part of it can be involved in the business. We have David on the phone from West Baltimore. David, how are you?
Okay, good, and I'm glad that you got me here.
Yes,
look, I wanted to mention our higher echelon. How about our congressmen and our local officials? Don't they have a lot to do with the way this legislation is going that separates us in terms of parity for our kids? You know, I mean, shouldn't they be involved in changing some of the stuff that's holding our kids back? And they know this. They already know that the educational system is rigged. You know what I mean? This is not new knowledge to them.
No, it's not.
I mean, what about that particular aspect?
No, I'm with you. I'm with it, which is why, David, I am big into holding our elected officials accountable. I tell folks, if you don't know the voting record of your council person, if you don't know the voting record of your senator, then what exactly are you doing? Because the people who should be speaking up for you, the people who should be representing your values, should be the people that you vote for. Not because they've been in politics their entire life. Not because their daddy was a senator or their mama worked for the... No, it's because that person is in line with the goals that you have. And one of my big goals is what is happening with education, because we know that it is black and brown children who suffer. And we have black and brown people at the table, and they're not standing up and making their voices heard.
And that's sad. That is very sad. That we have people who we put in the office to represent us, and they sell out to the large media.
Yes, they do.
You know what I mean? They just sold us out.
Yep, and it happens all the time.
And when we look at this thing on a realistic level, we basically have no one to fight for us.
No.
You know what I mean?
No.
And we're served on our, this is why a lot of our voters don't bother about going to the polls.
No.
You know, because they just feel like we've been sold out as a people.
No, we're going to have to save ourselves, David. We have to save ourselves because nobody is coming to save us. That may sound horrible, but, folks, I'm being very honest.
No,
nobody is swooping in to save us.
That's very true.
Nope.
This is why, you know, I'm keyed in on that recognition that we're talking about building our own and producing our own, because nobody's going to give that to us.
Not at all. I agree with you, David. Thank you so much. Folks, I'm telling you, if I had to do it all over again, I mean, I got a 12th grader and I got a 10th grader. If I had to do it all over again, I have a lot of questions about the way I did this thing in terms of education. I got a lot of questions because sometimes you think that you're making the best decision because we can only do the best we can in that moment, right? But when we look back with that long eye of history and knowledge and experience, when our hair starts to turn a little gray and we wonder, how did we make that decision? We look and we think, maybe my children needed to be in an environment where other people who look like them, and we then poured our resources into that school. Maybe we should have started our own schools. Maybe we should be homeschooled. I'm just throwing these options out. We're sending our babies out here, and we're taking whatever they're giving us. I have said to my son over and over again, you do not have to eat every crumb they give you just because you're hungry. You can say no. You can still have standards, because we've gotten used to, as a people, with eating every single crumb and then just being happy that they're feeding us. Folks, we don't have to be like that anymore. We can stand up tall. Dr. King says, you know, it's hard for a man to ride on your back when you're standing up tall. We have Miss M on the phone, driving on the Beltway. Miss M, how are you?
Yes, thank you, Dr. K. I appreciate you taking my call.
Absolutely.
I wanted to offer up a rebuttal to Angela, I believe, who said it's never a bad thing to have your child go to school in a community different from where they live. I don't know how horrible, she doesn't understand how horrible of a statement that was.
Mm.
I don't think she understood how her mom got her and her sister to go to that school. While it may not have been a felony back then, I'm pretty sure it was some type of crime. And even if it wasn't a punishable crime, it was against the rules to go to a school that you weren't zoned to go for, even back in the 80s.
Unless you could.
Like, I went to a school that was different from where I lived in the 70s because my babysitter was there. So there are certain extenuating circumstances, all of which they have started to dwindle away. So these parents don't have a right. Do you know how hard it is to get your child to go to a different school?
It's so difficult. The school
that my youngest stepson was scheduled to go or zoned to go to was Woodlawn Senior High School in Baltimore County. Woodlawn Senior High School is one of Baltimore County's worst high schools.
Yes, it is.
And it was traumatic for us as parents to have to send our son to that school.
So did you end up sending him there, Miss M?
We had to send him there for 1 year, and then we did what we had to do to get him the heck up out of there.
Yep.
Now, trying to do it legally, and which we did do it legally, but trying to do it legally through there's a form that you can fill out to say that it was just causing too much stress for the child.
I have to stop you there, Ms. M. Oh, I really appreciate you. Folks, we're going to delve down deep. When we come back, Thomas, William, D, Lance, Doreen, do not hang up. I'll take you first, and then I'll be joined by Davon Love, and we're going to talk about politicians, folks. This is Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. Quick update from MTA, and then stay with us.
And a good afternoon. The light rail link running on time, but the Metro subway link still has that 5 to 10 minute delay. That's in both directions, and that's because of the single tracking maintenance operations going on between the Shot Tower stop and Johns Hopkins. On the Penn Line of the MARC train system, train 537 is 5 to 10 minutes late. There are no other delays anywhere on the MARC system. Local link bus diversions include the 37 southbound diverting at Ingleside and Frederick, 37 northbound diverting at Bloomsbury and Malore, the 38 and 79 buses diverting southbound at Grenada and Fairview, 38 and 79 northbound diverting at Lawina and Wakefield. For the MTA Transit Team, I'm Ken Berger on 88.9 FM WEAA, the voice of the community.